Cultivate Simple, episode 34, open for business.
Business. Get to work!
I'd rather be a farmer. I'd rather work the land. I'd rather see the mountainsides. I'd rather see your I'd rather swim the ocean. I'd rather not pretend.
Welcome to Cultivate Simple, an honest and unrehearsed discussion about trying to live a more simple life. This is episode 34, and today we are going to be discussing some of our tips for starting a small business, or even thinking about starting a small business, and why you should think about starting a small business, and all things small business, as Susie chokes on her water. It's a smooth way to start the show there, honey.
Wow.
Have your glass of water just for making sure you don't have problems during the podcast, and then you choke on it.
At the right time.
That's right. We're sitting here. We're back in Ohio, as we mentioned last week. We drove back to Ohio. We have some work, 3 weddings to film over the we had one Friday and then one next Saturday and then one the following Saturday, and then that's it.
And then we're officially retired.
Yeah, the name of our company was Second Mile Production, so we're saying that this is the Second Mile retirement tour, which a lot of our friends are liking. A lot of the people that we work with, a lot of our colleagues. So it's been fun, but that... Are you all right?
Yeah.
Do you need a minute?
Maybe.
You're going to make it?
I think
it?
I got an egg down the wrong windpipe. eating some scrambled eggs quickly before the show because we were hungry, so...
You're talking quietly again this week.
Oh, no.
Yes, get right in there. So this got us to thinking, though, about our business. We've been doing our business before was videography, and mainly wedding videography. We did some commercial videos, some promotional videos, some just odd random video projects, but mainly wedding videos. And we've decided with our move to Maine to transition out of that, and for me to focus on web development, which was another thing that I've been doing and sort of building that side of our business for the past, for a while. I mean, I've been doing web development for almost 12 years, but it was more of just a side job or something I would do for friends. And about 5 years ago, I really decided to take it seriously and to relearn everything from the ground up. And really got into the programming side of things and just really enjoy that. In transitioning out of videography, which we've been doing, this is our 11th year doing it, we started to think about our business and about how we started, because we didn't go about it in sort of the traditional manner of, you know, most of the books that you read will say, make a business plan and come up with a mission statement and, you know, all these, and a budget and all these different things. And that's not really how we did it. And so we just wanted to sort of go through some of our ideas and some of our thoughts on what we did. And to be perfectly honest, it's probably not the right way to do it. It's probably not, you know, necessarily maybe a good way for some people to do it. But it was the way we did it, and we've been successful with it. So yeah, we're just going to share some of those thoughts tonight. But before we get to that, how was that for a teaser? Before we get to that... What's for dinner? Or maybe lunch, actually. Because we had a little bit, and this is a little bit something out of the ordinary, not one of our typical crazy, you know, gourmet meals with a side of something special. So why don't you tell us a little bit about one of the snacks we had for lunch? Because we ate a lot today.
One of the snacks we had for lunch.
Today's Father's Day, and so we had the nieces and nephew came over, and
sister and brother-in-law, and
yeah, Unfortunately, your dad's in South America right now, but we got to talk to him via Skype. So,
right.
But yeah, tell us about what.
So we had the treat venison steaks, back straps to be specific.
Mm-hmm.
And then the kids had venison hot dogs. And then we had a side salad. What else did we have? Watermelon.
Watermelon, yeah.
The salad was a salad that I had picked from the garden and brought with me. And then I made a balsamic vinaigrette to go over that. So it was kind of a simple meal, really, you know, salad, steak.
It was almost sort of picnic.
We had sauteed. Yeah, we were going to grill out, but it was raining. So I ended up cooking the steaks over the cast iron skillet in the stove. But, you know, as far as my personal opinion, a steak cooked in a cast iron skillet's way better than one grilled, unless you're grilling it over an open fire. But even then, I think the ones cooked in the cast iron skillet are better. So we had that. And then we had, did we have milkshakes when we got back? Yeah. So then we went on, and then I made elderflower fritters.
Because
the elderflowers, the elderberry bushes are blooming really nicely now. And I've always wanted to make the fritters. I'll put a link in the show notes. I used Nigel Slater's recipe for elderflower fritters, and we had some of those, which were kind of good. I fried them in coconut oil. They were kind of tasty. I mean, they taste like fried kind of food. I'm not sure. I don't know. I should have fried some batter separately and then some with the flour, so we could have tried to see. I think they had a little bit of flavor, but...
Yeah, some of the ones that you made initially, the first ones you were dipping pretty heavily as far as the fritter,
the batter
was
concerned.
Yeah. But then some of the later ones that you made that had less batter, you could actually taste some of the elderflower in there.
Like
it was
the
interesting.
Sweetness of them or something like that. Yeah, they were pretty good.
We've always wanted to try those, and as we were walking around the yard with your mom when we got here the other day, you know, we noticed that the blossoms were on, or the blooms were on.
And they're perfect. Perfect open state for fritters right now. So.
And plus, who doesn't like good fried dough?
That's a good way to get some coconut oil.
Yeah, exactly.
In your diet.
And one thing that I do want to point out is that, because I grew up, you know, eating fried food, my grandma would cook, you know, hamburgers and french fries 3-4 nights a week. So I know my fried food.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I like about when you fry with coconut oil is I don't feel like you have that greasy feeling afterwards.
No,
I don't feel like
it's refined oil.
Right. It's not like coming out through your pores and making you feel like you need to, you know, go take a shower afterwards. So, yeah, I really enjoyed that. And they were good. They were really good. And we sprinkled them with a little bit of sugar when we got them out.
Yep.
That was fun.
Yeah. And then we went on a bike ride with our nieces. We took them on a long bike ride.
Yeah.
They were kind of complaining a little bit about
going
up the hills.
They were complaining quite a lot, actually.
A lot, but, you know, they're kind of cream puffs. So, we're hardcore.
Yeah.
I don't know about that, but we were both kind of big bikers when we were kids, you know, and would ride our bikes all over the county all the time. So, we took them out for a pretty long ride, and it was probably about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And they were complaining pretty bitterly when we were going up some of the big hills, but... They survived. They survived to enjoy a milkshake when we got back.
Yeah, that's right. Made it all worth it.
So, yeah, one of them had a float. So
it was a fun afternoon and a lot of good food.
Yep.
So that brings us in then to the quote of the week, because it also kind of deals with food.
Mm-hmm.
So last week we got into our car and I sniffed a couple times and just... I turned to Susie and said, "Did you spill some sea juice in here?" Because it smelled like
the ocean. Yeah.
And here, that was when we had our...
I had gone to Fedco Grower Supply, so I had a bag of kelp meal in the car.
And so it just smelled like the sea.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting, strange quote of the week.
Yep.
It's probably not as funny when we say it like that.
Probably not.
It was funny in the moment. Sea juice.
Yeah. It was funny when he
sea
was
juice
like,
is
did
funny.
You spill... some sea juice in here?
I don't know how else to describe it. Like, you know. Well, I thought it was because 2 days before that, you went and...
I bought scallops and fish and that kind of stuff.
So I don't know if that's what it was. Anyway.
Yeah.
So that we have a couple other quotes, but I'm going to sprinkle them throughout the Around the Run update.
Oh, yeah.
Because they go along with other things. So before we left for Ohio, we had kind of a short week. Dalen came back and...
he came back Monday, arrived Monday night. Mm-hmm.
And brought a friend with him because this would be... He's going to be there for... basically two and a half weeks. And he was kind of concerned because he said that this is the longest he'll ever have been alone, but you know, like by himself. And our house is pretty isolated as far as neighbors or, you know, interaction is concerned. Yeah. So
he is clearly not an introvert, because if you're an introvert, he'd be like, awesome. 2.5 weeks completely by myself.
Yeah, exactly. Susie almost volunteered to stay home and send Dalen to film the weddings. But he asked permission if he could bring a friend back and brought a friend with him. And it was just kind of funny because his friend Wade was really super nice guy. In the short time we spent with him, and got to know him a little bit, just a super nice guy. And he's 21, like Dalen.
Just graduated from college.
Yeah, but the funny thing is he graduated from
an art school.
He's an industrial designer. And he came up with... I don't know what his expectations were. I don't know what he was thinking or hoping or wondering what was going to be happening. But the funny thing is... It was sort of trial by fire as far as once he got there, because they arrived on Monday, and on Tuesday, you know, we informed Dalen that we wanted to slaughter two of the ducks and our second rooster because we were having problems with our two roosters fighting and jumping their fences and getting after one another. So,
and one of our roosters decided to... He never particularly attacked me, but he was becoming aggressive towards me. And I watched, you know, I mean, I had to almost kick him a couple times, and I would usually carry a stick when I went in their fence. But he was becoming slightly aggressive, so it was...
The interesting thing is that one was the less dominant rooster.
Yeah.
So the dominant rooster is actually really nice.
He's a very good rooster.
Yeah. So I mentioned that to Dalen on the first full day that they were there. And Dalen is a very, you would describe him as a go-getter. if you tell him something or mention something to him,
he's
ready to do it right now without, you know, any thought or, you know, just let's
no
go.
Pondering and, going on
yeah,
there.
It just, let's do it. When I said that, he kind of looked at Wade and, Wade was like, yeah, let's do it. And so, the first day Wade got to experience the slaughtering of, two ducks and a rooster. And so then they plucked them and everything. And, and then Susie, dressed them as it were. And so now Susie actually brought some of the duck breasts back with us, three of them.
And a couple of the legs so we could cook them and my mom could enjoy them. Plus they're Muscovy, so they're just huge, huge ducks. I mean, I think each one weighs 8 or 9 pounds fully dressed. So we brought some back for us. We left one with them to eat on during the week, but I took three of the breasts and... I actually salt cured them overnight last night, and I wrapped them up today, and I'm making some duck breast prosciutto, so I'm pretty excited about trying that. I'll put a recipe in the show notes. I'm trying this recipe kind of. I'll probably cut one of them after a week and see what it's like. And I can't wait till... It's hard when you're trying to do this kind of stuff away from home. I knew I needed salt, so I brought salt, but I didn't bring any fresh herbs or any of that kind of stuff. So I'm pretty excited next time to be able to be at home and have some fresh herbs and maybe try some juniper berries and some other interesting flavors in the recipe. So
that means that we are down to two ducks, a male and a female, and our female is sitting on a pretty good size clutch of eggs.
14 to 18 eggs. The last time I counted was 14.
And we're hoping that that they'll hatch out about a week after we get back to Maine.
Yeah, Muscovies have a really long kind of incubation. I think it's 35 days. So, and it just depends. I mean, it's hard to tell sometimes when they're for sure sitting and when it starts the process, because but we'll see. Yeah, we're thinking first week of July, which is good because we're getting 10 ducklings and a pair of goslings at that point. We were hoping it would all happen to be at the right timing. So trying to see if the duck can surrogate all the ducklings. We'll see. That's surrogate a lot of little
30.
That's a lot of little ducklings.
30 little ducklings.
But yeah, we'll see if that works out.
And then one of our guineas is also broody.
Right.
And
we're kind of nervous about that because guinea keets are just so tiny when they hatch out. And she's kind of in a really protected spot. It's under the ramp to our coop. But then there's chicken wire on the outside. So
it's possible that the keets could get out once they're hatched. Yeah, so we're going to have to keep a really close eye. And as soon as they're hatched out, we might have to grab them up. And
I don't know the timing on that positively. I'm hoping it doesn't happen until after we get back.
Mm-hmm.
And it shouldn't, but we'll see. I had Dalen set up the brooder already. He's supposed to be setting it up while we're gone, just in case. And probably beginning of next week, I'm going to have him start checking twice a day and making sure that none of them are hatching. So we'll probably grab those just because they're not in a good spot. So I'm going to grab them and throw them in a brooder. Mm-hmm.
And then we also moved the pigs, which we'll talk about that a little bit more in a second. We moved them out of the garden. And last week we mentioned that we planted our 200 pounds of potatoes. We've got all that in the ground. And then Dalen is supposed to be covering those up this week with compost.
Yep.
We're saying a lot of Dalen is supposed to be, and we're hoping that he did.
Right. It's a hard thing. I mean, he came back and we did a bunch of stuff and kind of walked him through what we wanted him to do and left him lists and diagrams. And, you know, we have no idea what's going on. It's kind of hard to leave because, you know, you invest so much in something and then you're gone for so long. And it's right at the height of the season when a lot of stuff needs to be happening. So.
But that's just the way the schedule worked out. I mean, we wouldn't have done it that way, obviously, if we had our choice, but we didn't.
And we're glad that he's there because, yes. I mean, he's been there for a month and a half, so he kind of knows the swing of things.
Yeah. But it's still just nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
And especially, too, that there are a lot of things in the garden that are coming ripe and that need harvesting and new things that need planted that we're going to have to plant late because we're going to be getting back. And then just trying to find projects for him that he can do, you know, to keep himself busy. So, yeah. But then we left the whole thing in Dalen's hands. And as you said, which is another quote of the week, I hope everything's still alive when we get back home.
Yeah.
So that's the big hope. And I actually skipped over Dalen's quote of the week because after that night when he and Wade had slaughtered the two ducks and the chicken, or in the rooster, he was out in the kitchen and all of a sudden he was getting into the refrigerator.
We were all in the living room.
And the three of us were sitting in the living room and he looked over and said, he said, "Today was a really successful day." And the three of us, Wade and Susie and I, just looked at each other and just started cracking up laughing. And just said, "Oh, well, that's the quote of the week right there." So, that brings us into the fail of the week, which has to do with moving the pigs.
Right. And this will explain why I said, "Well, I hope everything's alive when we get back."
We knew we wanted to move the pigs off of the garden area and into more of a wooded area. We have a wooded area right behind the chicken coop that has some huge oak trees in it that dropped a ton of acorns last fall, and a lot of them are still on the ground. And so we knew there'd be some great forage in there for the pigs. And plus, we've heard that pigs are decent at controlling undergrowth of forest areas, and they're forest animals. I mean, that's in the wild, that's where wild hogs and that breed lives, or that species lives, and do all their foraging in the woods typically. So we knew that they would do all right in there, but we wanted to move them before we left. But Susie was just
not want Dad. That was like, I don't want him trying to move the pigs while we're not there.
Right. Especially by himself.
Right. And I've read a ton about moving pigs. I've moved the pigs before. We moved them a couple times. But
as I said previously or earlier in the podcast, when you tell Dalen to do something, he is a go-getter and doesn't really think about the consequences of what can happen. If that does happen, what do I need to do in order to fix that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so three or four things need to happen. Okay, what order should I do these steps in order to make them happen and all be successful? So we were moving them from a fence that was about 30 feet from their old area. We were moving them into a new area. But in order to do that, we had to move their fencing. We had to move their house and, of course, all their, you know, food,
the trough,
the water bowl, everything else. So as I looked at it, I thought the best way to do it would be to take another fence to set it up outside their existing fence as kind of a holding area and a transition area, because then we could get them into that transition fence. And then once we got them into there, we set up the new fence, we move their house, we move everything else. And then we just open up the new fence, open up the transition fence, they go into the new area. So it's kind of a multi-step process.
Like a paddock kind of system.
So we did that, and it was going swimmingly. We had them in the transition area. We pulled up their fences. We moved the house. We had to cut a path because our fencing wasn't big enough to go around the wooded area that we wanted to. So we had to cut a path right down through the middle so that we could run the fence through the wooded area. We did that. And so we're getting ready to move the pigs from the fenced area, from the transition area to the new fenced area.
And I was not present.
Right. And my idea was that we would basically do what we did before. We would open up that transition area into the newly fenced area, but it had to be, we only had one opening in that fence, and it was where we started, not where we were ending. So I was kind of looking at it, and I thought to myself, well, if we take down the fence and kind of curl around, this is hard to explain on a podcast, but kind of curl it around so that we could get that opening to the other side and sort of move them as we're doing it, we could just then open the new area, they would walk in, and all would be well. Originally, before we started any of this, we had some hog panels around their house, and Dalen said, well, let's just take those hog panels, put them in the hog panels, and then move them over there. And then we can just keep them in the hog panels until we get everything else done. Well, I knew that wasn't going to work because everything else, which is moving the fence in their house and all that other stuff, took, what, 2 hours?
Yeah.
So I knew we couldn't keep them in these hog panels for 2 hours because it's not a big area that we would have them in.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, knowing pigs, if they can see the other side, they will try to go through to get to the other side. You know, that's why a lot of times when you see people moving hogs or loading them onto a trailer, they use, don't they call them pig boards? Yeah. So they use pig boards. If they can't see through it, they won't go towards it. So then you can steer them using these pig boards.
Right.
You know, you just show them where you want them to go and they'll go. So as I start to finalize this move from the transition area to the newly fenced area, Dalen says, well, I just don't see why we can't take those hog panels, put them around the pigs. And there was three of us. The three of us hold each corner, which then formed kind of a triangle. And then we lift up that fence and they move into the new place. I said, well, the reason I don't want to do that is because I see a lot of things going wrong. And then what happens if they get out of that fenced in area? If we made the transition the way I was talking, which is wrapping around the transition area fence into the new area, you have a backup plan because you have that fence around them. So worst case scenario, they run into the fence. With the hog panels, if they get through that, there's nothing behind that. I mean, that's it. But, so the fail of the week is listening to your intern. We put the hog, I said, well, you know, and he, oh, no, this will work. So we grabbed the hog panels and put them around.
You'd read that book on pigs, though, right? Or maybe not all of it.
Yeah, I did. I knew, but because in theory, it could work. In theory. it could possibly work.
Oh, man.
But like I said, the problem is that if they do get out, they're in the open at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So we put the three hog panels around them and sort of formed a triangle. And Dalen then left his corner to lift the transition fence up over us to get it away from the hog panels, because obviously they're not going to walk, you know, under that one of those fences because they're afraid of the electric fences. So he lifted up the fence over us. So now we're in the clear. We're standing out in the open with just the hog panels around the pigs. And one of the pigs saw that Dalen had left his corner, and it opened up just an inch, and it busted towards it and went right through those two hog panels.
These things are like tanks, man. These little pigs are, they're probably, I don't know how much they weigh now.
They're probably 70 or 80 pounds now.
80 pounds. And they're just like, they're like bricks.
Yeah.
Like bags of Quikrete on little legs, these things. There's no like stopping them. There's no picking them up.
There's no nothing.
Yeah. They'd go where they want to go unless there's an electric fence that's going to keep them back.
Yeah. So now we have a pig loose, which is not a good situation. And you hear horror stories about pigs being loose. But I am luckily good at making
decisions
on the fly and being and using my commanding voice, which is from one of my previous jobs, being able to explain things quickly and succinctly. So I told Wade, I said, grab the hog panel you're on, set it up so that you're making a gate at the corner of the new fenced in area. I told Dalen to grab another one of them. At this time you came walking up. And so you grabbed
out. You already had one pig in.
Right.
Which had gotten loose too. So I came up on the second pig.
Right.
Because loose pig.
We actually, I went over and chased the first pig, and it actually went into the fenced area, which was great. But then we had the second pig, and we had no way to close that fence because we had to get the second pig in, which is when the second pig got out. Because we tried to move the hog panels, and the second pig got out, which is when you came up. The one thing that you have to do, and this actually ties into our topic for tonight too, is the one thing you have to do is understand what you're trying to do and understand, like with animals, if you're wanting to keep chickens or you're wanting to keep pigs or you're wanting to keep bees or anything, if you're wanting to do anything, you really have to study what it is you're working with, because then you know how it reacts to certain inputs. With pigs, if you run up behind them, they will run. If you grab onto them, they will kick. So you just shouldn't do those things.
You can't grab them.
What you should do is try to work with their natural instincts. If they're going to run from you, then make sure you're behind them and you have them heading the way you want them to run. You know, and it's like I said, it's like that with anything. But knowing the instincts and knowing the way that animals or anything reacts to certain inputs is very helpful in these types of situations, because I ran out and it was kind of running down along where the old fence line used to be. So I went out wide and got around it, kind of like a border collie would do if it was herding animals. I went out around, got in front of it, so it turned around and started heading back the way we came. And after a few movements of hog panels to corral it into where we wanted it to go, we ended up getting it into the fence, closing the fence, and electrifying the fence as quickly as possible. But it really pointed out that, A, you shouldn't listen to your intern, and B, you should really consider when you're making decisions what the consequences are going to be, and think about what you're going to do if something does go wrong. Which actually brings us into another fail of the week we talked about last week, which is the bee update, or the bees. A lot of people asked last week when I told the story about the bees and about catching the swarm and things not going well, moving them and having them laying on the ground and me feeling like an idiot. A lot of people asked, you know, about for an update in the comments in the show notes. So we wanted to give a quick update on that as well. So on Monday, I had Matt come over after work, and we went up there. I had moved the hive back. Most of the bees did go back into the hive. There was still a pile that was laying on the ground. And so I had Matt come over, and we spent about an hour up there sort of lightly combing through this pile of bees, which was, I don't know, maybe 200 bees, somewhere around there. But we were afraid, since that pile was sticking on the ground, that the queen was under there somewhere. So we spent about an hour combing through, and Matt did some a knock test, which is where you knock on the side of the hive, and when you do that, it's almost like an engine revving. The bees will voo, and if they stay revved, that usually means that there's not a queen in the hive. If they calm right back down, that means that there is a queen. And they passed the rev test. They calmed back down afterwards, so that was good. And like I said, we combed through the pile of bees on the ground and didn't see a queen. So we were 95% sure the queen is in the hive. It was going to rain that night, and so I actually put a box over top of that little pile, hoping they would move in. And they never did, but they were still moving around, and they were still active for the next couple days, even after the or the next day, even after the rain. I didn't check on them before we left, so I'm not exactly sure if those made it back in. But if after all the fiasco and craziness and pile of bees that we had laying there, if we only lose 200 out of that, I'm going to count myself very lucky. So Matt is going to go up. We'll have another update on the bees next week, because Matt's going to go up sometime this week, open up the hive, make sure the queen is in there, and make sure that they're drawing out the comb and doing what they're supposed to be doing. So that's the update on the bees. We hope that they're doing all right. We didn't leave Dalen in charge of those, so
no,
because that's kind of a specialized thing you have to do for a while, in order to feel comfortable and to know what's going on with the hive. And that, like I said, that goes back to knowing what you're doing with something before you do it. Which obviously last week was my fail of the week, because I didn't. So
well, that's a good lesson to learn in the issue of like expediency.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's easy to sometimes try to cut corners to save time, but you always end up making more work for yourself in the end. You know, it never works to try to cut corners. It really doesn't. You may delay some work, but it usually ends up being doubling the amount you have to do. So
yeah,
expediency never gets you farther ahead. That's something we're really trying to, an important lesson we're trying to press upon Dalen, because he has a tendency to be expedient as opposed to doing things in the proper way.
And again, that goes into our topic for tonight.
Yeah.
But before we get into that, we wanted to share a quick note from one of our readers / listeners who sent Susie a note, and so we wanted to read that. It says, "Hi, Brian and Susie. I listen to your podcast every week. So we finally did it. We're subscribers.
Yay.
Yay. We love the simple pleasure of working in the garden, and I'm a little bit geeky. Brian, you talked about the reader that you were using now that Google will drop that service. It sounded good. Time is running out. I need to switch too. Remind me." And that was from Kathy and Ben. So thank you guys for supporting the podcast and the blog. That's great.
And I messaged Kathy back and said, "Oh, thanks so much. We really appreciate it. It keeps us like, it keeps us doing the podcasts on nights like tonight where we're traveling and it's kind of a pain and we're busy all day and, you know, that kind of thing. So we definitely appreciate it."
Yep. And just if you need to know again, that is, I don't know if you sent that to her in the note, but it's newsblur.com is the service that I'm using instead of Google Reader. And I'm still liking it. I like their website. I like the app that they have. It just works really well. And It just makes a lot of sense. So newsblur.com, you can check that out. And if you want to support the podcast and the blog, you can go to cultivatesimple.com/support. Or you can just look in the sidebar on the website, and there are links over there to either sign up as a monthly $5 a month or $10 a month subscriber. Or you can give a one-time donation of whatever amount. Mm-hmm. And we just really appreciate that. It helps pay the bills and keep things going. And like Susie said, it really helps to keep motivate us. Yeah.
Because otherwise, I probably would have quit. Not really. It's not like I'm doing it for the money, or I wouldn't be doing it. But
right. Yeah.
It's just one of those things that makes it a little more difficult to not do it.
Right.
I think there's only been 1 week where we haven't done it because we were just too busy that week, but
and I don't want to keep beating that drum like, oh gosh, no. It's such a, you know,
it's but not, but it, you know, sometimes
it's another thing, and that's,
it would,
you
definitely
know,
be easier to not do it sometimes, but
we do try to look at our lives and look at our schedules, and we try to cut the things that are not heading towards the goals that we want to reach, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
We're just always analyzing what we're doing. Why are we doing it? What is it getting for us? What ends is it, you mm-hmm. know, working towards?
We definitely try to maximize a lot of things,
because
particularly our time.
Because time is a very limited quantity. Mm-hmm. Or you have a very limited quantity of time. And so, but one of the reasons for the blog and one of the reasons for the mm-hmm. podcast is education. So we hope that you're getting something out of this. I hope, maybe entertainment too. I don't know. I don't know if we're entertaining, but hopefully you're getting something out of it, because that's why we're doing it. Are you all right over there?
Yeah, I just...
You're just having problems.
I think I have a piece of egg stuck in my windpipe.
You need to gargle or something? Or
I don't know. It'll come out eventually, I suppose.
Or you can just cough throughout the whole thing. That's fine.
Yeah, I don't know.
And that again, ties into our topic for tonight. We're calling it Open for Business. That's the name of the podcast. And we want to talk just a little bit about why we started our videography business 11 years ago and some of the things that we learned throughout that 11 years in order to make our business a success. And I know, based on feedback that we received from another couple episodes, that there are a lot of people out there that are thinking about doing mm-hmm. this. Or,
and we did an episode about our business or being self-employed or mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah, the ups and downs of it.
I can't remember how long, a long time ago. And a lot of people had more questions about starting your own business, that kind of stuff. So, mm-hmm.
So we just want to explore a few of those things and talk about, first of all, why we started our own business. Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, we probably didn't do it the right way. We probably didn't do it the best way, but we did it and it worked. So don't take any of this as, you know, the gospel of how to start a small business.
No, I think finding what's going to work for you is the most important thing. You know?
But yeah, finding something that you like.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, we did like video.
We still don't mind video, but it just gets...
Well, and
we've just moved on to other things, I think.
Right. And it is work. I hate to say that you have to find something that you enjoy doing.
Right.
Because that can also be a complete cop-out statement of like, oh, well, I don't enjoy doing this, so I'm just not going to do anything. Well, you know what?
There's a reason that people pay you to do it, which
exactly.
is what I always say.
You are trading your
time. There's a reason it's
time.
Not called fun.
Yeah, it's not called fun. It's called work. We say that all the time. And it's called work for a reason, because you're trading your time and your skill in something for money.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And anything that you do that you enjoy doing that you then do for money does become work.
It starts to lose some of its luster.
Yes. Yeah.
Because one of the reasons you enjoy doing it oftentimes is because it's not related to your work.
Or you're not doing it all the time.
Right, yeah.
If it's a hobby, or if it's just something you're doing for fun, or if it's something you do, you know, on the weekends or every once in a while,
mm-hmm.
but then you choose to turn that into a career or turn that into a small business, it does start to lose some of its enjoyment sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be true of any kind of business, you know, whether it be woodworking or jewelry making or videography. If you start to do it for money, if you start to do it continually, it just starts to wear on you. And that's definitely something that we found. So why did we start our business? It really started out of necessity. I was transitioning out of one career, and I had started messing around with video a year or two before, and I don't even know how wedding video...
Well, we recorded my college roommate's wedding, and then she loved it, and one of her friends happened to see it, and she liked it enough that she had hired another videographer for her wedding, but she canceled and lost her deposit in order to have Brian record her video, which is kind of funny because he'd only done one video up to that point. So we didn't necessarily even...
And that one took me about 6 months to edit.
We didn't even like start this business as like a business. It wasn't like we were like, oh yeah, let's get into weddings and do wedding video. It was like,
it was more
someone
like,
asked us and we're like, hey, why not?
You know, make a little extra money doing that.
So we did that, and then that worked out really well too. And then next thing we know, we had a bunch of people calling us. And so,
that's about the time that my previous career was ending, and I was wanting to get out of it, actually.
Yeah.
Just because it was
stressful,
way too stressful. So we decided to give it a shot.
Now, we said, what do we have to lose?
Yeah. And at that point, we had maybe two or three weddings or five weddings.
Two or three, that was it.
So it really,
but you did websites kind of too.
Right. There were other avenues for a little bit of income here and there. And our expenses weren't as much at that point either.
No.
So we could get by on less. And that's really one thing. That's kind of our first tip is that, and this will be the final tip as well, is to be frugal. Because if you simplify your life before you decide to start your business and you cut down on expenses, then you don't need to make as much.
Right.
And if you don't need to make as much, then there's not as much pressure to get the business up and running and, financially stable.
Right. And it's a lot easier to transition in between, because it's definitely easier to transition from one job to another without
having
putting
a,
one
yeah,
and
having
starting
no income.
Your other one right there. You know, you start one as a hobby, you know, you work on it, you know, be prepared to spend a lot of time and not have a lot of free time for a while you're building up one, if you still need to maintain income at your other job or at another job. So,
But if you can simplify your life, if you can cut down on things,
easier.
If you can cut down on expenses, if you can get by with canceling your cell phone, if you can get by with canceling your cable, you know, all those different things, take a good look at your finances and get down to the bare minimum.
Right, because it makes that transition point, like that tipping point, it can be a lot sooner.
Right.
If you have a lot fewer expenses, because then you don't need to worry about making as much. So maybe you can quit your other job sooner.
And if you do have a second income, that helps as well, because Susie has always had a small but steady income that we could definitely rely on. So my line in the beginning was always, well, if this doesn't work out, I'll go get a job at Best Buy or something.
Right. And our expenses were low enough that we could definitely get by working, you know, a job somewhere, just like a regular retail job or something like that, you know, and still maintain our level of like our current lifestyle, I guess you would say.
So Susie, as we were talking about this before, you know, why start a business or why should you start a business? She said, why not? Because you can.
I encourage everyone to.
Yeah.
I mean, we live in a great country where you have the opportunity, and there are so many people around the world that don't. So why not? I mean, you can do, I don't know, it's just one of those things. You can do whatever you want or...
And you can really make a business, and you can make money off of just about anything.
Right.
If you follow some of the tips that we're going to talk about.
Right. And there's this great quote. I need to see if I can find it. I know it's on my Let me see.
One of the things, or one of the other reasons to start it, is that it can give you extra cash. If you do have some extra time that you're willing to spend building a small business or doing, you know, like we mentioned, if you have a hobby that you, that if somebody keeps telling you, I would pay you to do that.
Yeah.
I want you to make one of those for me, and I'm going to pay you to make one of those for me.
That's probably a good
for a small business. And another tip that we sort of have is to think small. A lot of people say, you know, think big and, you know, oh, and you're going to turn this into a massive corporation and have multiple employees and everything. Our advice, at least what has worked for us, and I'm not saying that it's wrong to turn something into a huge business and have multiple employees, but think small, especially to start. What can you do on your scale with the time that you have? If you have 5 hours a week that you can devote to this new business, then take that time and fit what you can and maximize that time as much as possible to make the maximum amount of money that you can within that time.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever that business is. And 5 hours a week, you know, I'm sure just about anybody can find 5 hours a week. So what could you do within that 5 hours to market yourself, to make your product, to be making connections with people in the in whatever industry that is in order to get more sales?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, making sales, collecting money, and doing all the finances. You have to have time for all that as well.
And it's such an easy time to do this kind of thing, though. I mean, if you think about back in before the age of the internet,
mm-hmm.
It was a lot more difficult to start like a small cottage industry selling products, I think,
right.
Because you had your local, kind of your local scene, and that was it. I mean, and now with like Etsy and stuff and the internet, you can throw up a website and be selling to people all over the world or have mm-hmm. your product being seen by people everywhere.
And that's an often overlooked thing. Is marketing and those types of things. One thing that we did that made us really successful was trying to look for a way to market ourselves. Did you find that quote?
I did.
Okay, go ahead. Before I go into this next
point. Well, this kind of goes back to what we did before, like, why wouldn't you start a business? Mm-hmm. And one of the main reasons, I mean, I think one of the reasons we started a business was, you know, to make money, yeah, for sure. But because we've always been kind of focused on being able to have our time as ours.
Mm-hmm.
And because it kind of stinks when you're being paid by someone else and you have to drive and go to an office, you know, you're spending time driving in the morning and in the evening. And half the time when you're at work, I mean, how much of that time are you really productive in producing something?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are moments in the day where you just feel like, I mean, I've worked at multiple different kinds of venues before, and you just feel like you waste a ton of time
mm-hmm.
doing all of that stuff. And so one reason to start your own business is just to take back all that time. It's like your budget, getting rid of all the stuff that you don't necessarily need, getting rid of all the time that's wasted on stuff that's not like directly contributing to your making money.
Mm-hmm.
And this quote I really like because it kind of is all about this. And it's from Joe Eck and Wayne Winterroud, which is from the book Living Seasonally, which I mm-hmm. talk about all the time because it's probably my all-time favorite book. And the quote is, "Having time at one's command is perhaps the greatest luxury any human being can enjoy. Most people wait for it until the end of their working lives. Too often then, the special savor of it is brief or already lost entirely."
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's really what it's all about. I mean, working for yourself and being self-employed, you gain back that control of your time, and you can work as, I mean, you're still going to have to work. Clearly, it's not like
right.
you sit around all day and do nothing.
Which a lot of people believe about self-employment.
Which people think it is. But, you know, and sometimes like us, we have a tendency to work far. It's kind of the opposite. You have a tendency to work far too much. But mm-hmm. the nice thing is your time isn't being wasted by someone else.
Right.
You know, you might be wasting it yourself, but you're not, your time isn't being wasted by someone else, and you're not wasting it on things that are super annoying. Like,
Well, and at the end of the day, you have something to show for your time because you've built something for yourself.
Right.
You know, if you're working a 9-to-5 and you're pushing papers or whatever, you're doing something for someone else. And
you're making money for someone else. And being self-employed is great often because there is a direct correlation to how much you are investing as far as time and energy and how much you're getting back as far as salary and, you know, income is concerned. So that is one great thing about being self-employed. But the time thing really is, I mean, that's probably the most valuable thing as far as I appreciate about being, I mean, I'm sort of half self-employed, I guess. Yeah. But I love having time because we often do things in the off times. When we did weddings, we worked most weekends. So our days off, you know, if we would take them, would be during the week. And you can get so much more done when you're doing stuff during the week. So,
So I'll come back to the point I was going to make before because I want to talk about being unique first. If you're going to do something, if you're going to go out and start a business, if you're going to create a product, if you're going to provide a service, you have to do it. You absolutely have to do it in a unique way or you're setting yourself up to fail.
Oh, yeah. Especially nowadays.
Yeah. If you're... So with... I'll use our example to start with. With videography, we have a very unique look. It's unlike any other videographer in the area. Is it the best one? Not necessarily. Is it the one that everybody wants? Not necessarily. But it's one that has a very wide appeal that a lot of people enjoy and a lot of people want, and it's all ours. If you want this look and you want certain features, there's one thing that we started doing. I went to a video conference, and there were a few videographers doing these things called same-day edits, where you would... you'd go to the getting ready of the wedding day. You'd go to the ceremony, to the photo time in between, which is typically how it happens here in Ohio. And we would edit that footage together and show it at the reception. Now, that's insane because not only are you now filming all that stuff, but now you're trying to edit a 3 to 5 minute video to show at the reception. But I thought we could pull it off, and I kind of liked the excitement and the pressure of doing those for a while. And you and I would pull it off. And the best thing about that was we were one of just a couple companies in this whole area that was offering that service. And not only that, but then you're being paid to do marketing. We would show one of our videos at, you know, a reception to 200 people, and sure enough, there would be a few couples in there that had just got engaged, or parents of that just had children that just got engaged and were looking for videography, or didn't even know they wanted videography until they saw one of our videos. But that was unique. That was something that for the first 3 years that we did it, I mean, we'd have people come up to us afterwards and shake our hands and be like, "That's the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen anything like that before." And it made us stand out among the crowd.
And it definitely garnered us lots of business to the point where we contemplated hiring more people and decided not to. We raised our prices, set a limit to how many weddings we were going to do. And then we became, you know, really expensive.
But that's the thing, though, is that when you're unique, you can
charge more because you're a new unique product. You're not the same as everyone else. And it's kind of like, and I think sometimes uniqueness isn't necessarily about having a different product than someone else. I mean, sometimes it is, like in our case it is, but sometimes being unique is having great marketing, going the extra mile to maybe hire, if you have a friend who's very good at photography, hiring them to take photos of your products, because that makes such a world of difference. When you think about Williams-Sonoma, a lot of the products they sell, if you've seen their new agrarian line, are just products that other small businesses have made. If you go to the websites of these small businesses and you look at their pictures, they're not that great.
No.
And then Williams-Sonoma is selling the product for twice as much as this business is on their website or in their catalogs. And they command that because they spend the money to get professional photographers in a nice setting and have beautiful images and have a beautiful product. You know, and I've seen, there's a guy at our farmer's market that sells wooden spoons. Mm-hmm. And I buy wooden spoons from him because they're beautiful. He sits there and he whittles them, you know, and it's just him. And that's fine. That's what he likes to do. I buy wooden spoons from him. The last wooden spoon I bought, I paid like $25 for. And he has some really big, nice ones that are like 50.
Yeah.
But then I've been online and I've seen this one company in particular. I wish I could remember the name of it. I know I have a couple of their products pinned. I have a board on my Pinterest that's like a creative marketing board just for inspiration and for when I find a company that does particularly well at having a nice website and beautiful imagery and that kind of thing. They sell wooden spoons, and their wooden spoons, which are just like this guy's at the farmer's markets, are $190 to $250 a piece.
Right.
And people are buying them. They can command that because they have a beautiful website. While it's simple, it didn't cost them that much money. It's incredibly simple.
Mm-hmm.
And their photos are just fantastic. So, I mean, sometimes setting yourself apart and being unique isn't necessarily having a different product. It's looking at the way you're going to market yourself a little differently, or maybe just investing and doing it really well instead of kind of trying to do it on the cheap. Or,
and that's kind of the next point that I had was doing everything with excellence.
And that makes a world of difference nowadays. I think there are so many people that do everything, and so many, particularly of the larger corporations, that do everything. They've got the black, you know, the Six Sigma people, and they're trying to figure out how to shave off pennies of pennies of pennies, and generally that equals shaving off quality and shaving off the excellence. That's where you can really, and that's what small business is all about, or what it should be all about, is providing a really excellent, high quality product.
And as we start to talk about these different things, they all start to tie together, because I keep thinking about, we always joke about the everybody has one of these in their town. It's the corner restaurant. That the corner restaurant goes out of business, and what moves in?
Another corner restaurant.
And then they go out of business, and what moves in? Another restaurant. And if you go eat at this place and you order, you know, whatever,
eggs and hash browns,
it's not different in any way than the last place that was in there, or the place before it, or the place before that.
Right.
And yet, for some reason, these people think that they're going to succeed in the restaurant business. But based on what? You're not making yourself unique, and you're not doing anything with excellence, especially when it comes to food. Food has to be different, because there are thousands of restaurants that people can choose from. So what's going to make your place different from the place down the street? You know, are you going to make your food cheaper? Well, that's not really a good selling feature.
People are going to go to Taco Bell if they want cheap food.
Yeah, exactly. Taco Bell, McDonald's, Burger King have the corner on that market. So why not go the other direction and make your food really, really good, and make it different in some way? And that, so we just, what makes me think about this on the other end, I don't know if we talked about this in the show last week, but you found this place in Portland that fries everything in duck fat.
Yeah, so they have duck fat fries.
Yeah, and we are so excited to go to this place.
Ridiculously excited, and we have to go pick up ducklings down near Portland.
So we're going
to
go pick up ducklings,
and then go have duck fat fries.
And what's the place called?
It's like foreshadowing.
What's the place called?
It's called Duck Fat.
Yeah, it's called Duck Fat. So great marketing, great name.
And they don't, they only serve, like, they don't have a huge menu, but they specialize in duck fat fries and then some sandwiches and, you know, mostly good local kind of food. They make their own sodas, you know, like good soda.
And that's just something unique.
Herbs,
they could have gotten
nuts,
Pepsi,
you know,
or Coke to come in there and drop one of their machines in. But no, they make their own sodas.
Right.
You know, how neat is that? How and they make their own desserts as well.
Right.
So it's completely unique.
So we're just ridiculously excited about going to that
Everything
place.
On the menu.
Yeah.
Susie was reading the menu to me, and I was like, oh,
we
huh?
We eat everything.
Uh-huh.
And it's an hour and a half away, or, you know, an hour and 15 minutes away.
I said, we're going to have to go there for lunch on the way down to pick up the ducks, turn around and come back for supper so that we can have more than one thing, because everything sounds good. But that's what is going to make that business successful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hopefully they are a success unless something odd happens.
Yeah.
But that's how things normally work out, is that if you have something unique and you do it with excellence, you're going to succeed.
Right.
Because people are going to talk about it. And then that's what brings in the marketing, which mm-hmm. is what you were talking about. Share the story about the greenhouse.
And the greenhouse.
The greenhouse and the chicken that recommends everything. Or the
rooster. And I should look this up on Facebook because it's pretty awesome. So there's this greenhouse that I found somehow. I don't know. I think one of my friends liked it on Facebook. And it's called Snug Harbor, and it's mm-hmm. down in Kennebunk, maybe Kennebunkport. I can't remember.
I think it's Kennebunk.
In Maine. And so we went down there one day because it looked great, and it is. It's phenomenal. It's a beautiful place. Absolutely beautiful. Well, their Facebook is really great because they just got a new, and they have chickens. They have a big coop there with there were probably 10 different kinds of chickens and birds and peacocks.
Really
and
interesting varieties.
Really interesting birds.
Which makes the visit very interesting because you walk around and they're coming out into the runs and you can look at these different types of chickens.
Exactly, and the peacock was fanning his little feathers and giving us a show. But anyway, and we went down here solely because I found them on Facebook. I looked at their website. They had very engaging pictures. Mm-hmm. You know, it just looked like a place I knew I would love going. So, I don't know, for some reason, Facebook's running really slow. So anyways, I think it was last week they got a new rooster. And I think his name might be George. I can't remember. There's another place I follow whose name is George, so that might not be right. But they got this new rooster of a certain breed. I can't remember what. And I think two hens. So anyway, so now this rooster is hilariously recommending like a plant of the week. So it's a picture of like this rooster's head with the plant right next to it, which is phenomenal because it just cracks me up. And I'm, you know, I don't know. It's just really a great way to set yourself apart from every other greenhouse. You know, have a chicken coop and have a bunch of chickens. People are going to love that because, mm-hmm. you know, when you go to greenhouses, every single one is the same. Yep. But this place is completely different when you go. I mean, absolutely.
And they have...
And they've got the same thing. They've got
miniature
plants.
Horses.
They've got some miniature horses. They've got ducks running around. They've got geese running around. They've got... I don't know. They kind of specialize. They've got a lot of succulents,
but
it's just really interesting. And
they have the typical, you know, tunnels,
got the plants. Yeah,
like the plastic tunnels exactly. that every greenhouse has. So they are like every greenhouse, but then they have,
and they've set it up completely differently. And
they have an old house and an old barn that they have renovated into a showroom. And then another, kind of potting shed that they've renovated into. That's where they actually have all of their pots that you can buy mm-hmm. in the potting shed. But it's just different and it's done really, really well. And it's very cozy and the feeling of it.
Oh,
and
it's Pickle. The name of the rooster is Pickle.
Pickle. That's a great name for a rooster.
His pick of the week, I'll show Brian, is Hostas. Isn't that hilarious?
Yeah, it is. we can link that up in the show notes. If you're on Facebook, you can take a look at that. It's pretty funny.
I should be able to put a link directly to that post. Yeah. And if they have their thing set up correctly, as they should as a business, you should be able to see it.
So we'll put that in the show notes. But figure out a way to creatively market your product or your service.
And sometimes being excellent at what you do is all you need.
Right.
You know, because...
And think of ways, along with that thought, think of ways for people to market for you. I believe it was Starbucks that came up with the idea of rather than having fans, you have evangelists. And I always thought that was a really interesting concept. So instead of just having people that like the product or service that you provide, you have people who are actually going out and actively recruiting others to mm-hmm. buy your product or to take part in your service, which is something that really we tried to cultivate as well in our videography business, was that our former brides were going out and actively seeking, you know, the first thing off their lips when one of their friends would get engaged was, you need to hire Second Mile Productions. Here's their phone number. I had brides that, and mothers of brides that would call me up and say, you know, we don't care what the price is. Send us a contract. We want to book you. so-and-so told us about your services, and they sat us down and, you know, we watched their video with them and we absolutely love it. And we, you know, so I didn't have to do any work at all at that point as far as a sales call or, you know, talking about the product or anything. It was here, we want it, send us a contract. That's it. And it takes a long time to get to that point, but once you do, it's a great place to be. So the next thing is to make wise decisions and to consider alternatives. And like I said in the beginning, with Dalen, a lot of times he doesn't do this, not necessarily the wise decision part, but considering the alternatives. He doesn't consider or think things. I'm always saying we need to think this through to its logical conclusion. You always need to see what the end game is in whatever it is that you're doing, because a lot of times you can get caught up in. So going back to our example of, you know, weddings and those types of things, and we're friends with a lot of other wedding vendors. And one friend we had in particular, who's a photographer, would always go out and buy the latest camera gear. So whenever a new camera would come out, he would go get it. Whenever a new lens would come out, he would go get it. And then every once in a while, he would switch brands. So he'd switch from Canon to Nikon, which entailed selling all of his gear at a loss and going out and buying all new of all of his lenses, of all of his camera bodies, of all of his flashes. For this other brand. And then after a while, the other brand would come out with some feature that he wanted, so he would do it all again. And he wasn't making any money at it. No. And it was obvious why.
And some people lose sight of that. They get excited at the fact that, you know, oh, I can buy this and it's a tax write-off, and completely forget that, you know, you need to treat your business like you treat your personal finances.
Right. You need to make wise decisions and you need to think things to their logical conclusion. This is another reason we applied this principle heavily when deciding to get out of videography and wedding videography specifically. The trend right now is going towards using a different type of camera. And our cameras are 4 years old, and usually you want to start thinking about buying new equipment at that point, because you start to have problems. And obviously on a wedding day, you don't want to have a problem. But the cameras that I would have replaced ours with are about $7,000 a piece, and we would need at least two of them. And it's a good idea to have a backup camera. And in doing that, we would actually be transitioning brands, which would mean we would need to buy new batteries.
And new cases.
And new cases. And then also our wireless microphones. A lot of the new ones that are coming out are digital, which is clear signal, you know, better.
Right. And those we had to, I mean, we learned that we had to replace our microphones every couple of years because, you know.
They get bumped around. They start shorting out. And again, you know, if you're in the middle of the vows and everything starts shorting out. Ours cost about $600 a set. And then the new digital ones are about twice that or more expensive. I haven't checked on them in a while, but we looked at it and we were going to have to reinvest about $30,000 in our videography business to get us back up to where we needed to be if we were going to continue doing this. And at that point, you're basically starting the business over. Now, the good thing is we already have all of the clients, we already have all of the referrals, but then moving to Maine, obviously, we would have to rebuild that whole network and that whole base of referrals again. For the last 4 years in our business, we've done no marketing whatsoever. We don't have any paid advertising. We don't, besides our website, we didn't do any bridal shows. We didn't do any magazine ads. We didn't do any of the stuff that is normally done because we had so much business coming in from referrals and from showing same day edits at receptions. But again, those are unique products and our videos were unique and we always did them with excellence. And therefore it worked out well. But every decision that we made about our business, so Susie talked earlier about 5 years in, we had that year, I believe, was the year that we did 33 weddings in 1 year. And that was a lot. And we started talking about, do we want to continue to grow? Do we want to continue to do more weddings? Do we want to expand the business, start hiring other people, you know, start having employees, start accepting multiple weddings per weekend? But again, we started to think about that to its logical conclusion. Okay, if we do that, then we might be bringing in a little bit more money. But think of the overhead that we're going to have. We're going to now have employees that we're going to have to take care of. We're now going to have to book more weddings and be guaranteed to book more weddings in order to keep our employees employed. We're going to have to find talented people that can duplicate or replicate our our look and our process and the style of videography. And it's very easy to find people to push buttons and to point cameras. It's very difficult to replicate style without cloning yourself. So we used this process of all these different criteria and said, is that going to accomplish the goal that we want, which at that point was paying off our debt and becoming debt free. And as you said, sort of reclaiming our time and getting back, being able to do the things that we wanted to do. So we decided not to do it. We decided to keep the business small, to think small, to just keep it us, but then to start increasing the amount of money that we were charging so that we could accomplish that goal of reclaiming time and do fewer weddings per year. So that's what we did. At that point, our main package was, I believe, $1,000. It was either $9.99 or $12.95.
I don't remember.
It was right around there. And within 4 years, we were charging $3,500 for our weddings. And people were still paying it. And at that point, when you're charging three times the amount, you can do three times less weddings and still be making the same amount of money.
And we cut back to 15 weddings a year.
So then we cut back to 15 weddings a year, which then is almost another marketing technique because you have exclusivity. So when somebody contacts you, you can say, you know, well, we only take 15 weddings per year. You're possibly number 10. So if you want to book with us, now's a good time to do it. And it's not, it wasn't a sales pitch. I never hard sell. I hate hard selling. I worked retail in college and that was enough hard selling for me. So we just always explained what the situation was and let the chips fall where they may. If it worked out, it worked out. If it didn't, that was fine because we knew that there would be other people. And that sort of takes us on to, or hopefully you can see that process of wise decisions, excellence, and being unique within those things. Susie mentioned it earlier, but you have to, and this is kind of where the rubber meets the road, I guess. You have to be willing to invest a lot of time and energy, especially up front, especially in the beginning, without much return. You have to go in with that expectation that you are going to kill yourself over this, you know, depending on what it is, and probably not see results for a while. And that's the way it was for us.
Right. And this is interesting because I've been talking a lot with Dalen about this. You know, we talk a lot in the afternoons and evenings about he would love to start his own business, you know, and I'm always encourage everyone to start their own business. And he's always trying to think of something he can do. And I never have a shortage of ideas of businesses I could start. I mean, I've always got 10 different things I would love to start a business doing, you know, but I just don't have the time to do it. But the thing is, like, one, I was telling him he could do mushroom logs. He could do inoculated mushroom logs and sell them at the local farmers markets, that kind of thing. And he was like, oh, that's a great idea. And so then we started talking a little bit about it. Of course, he had never read about and had never inoculated mushroom logs. So I started explaining to him the process and explaining to him that it takes, you know, 6-8 months to a year for the thing to start to fruit. So he was like, oh, but then I would have to wait and I wouldn't be able to necessarily you know,
make money, sell them.
Make money until, you know, 6 months down the road or, you know, that kind of thing. So then he wasn't very interested in that because he really, I mean, he's as American as you can get, I think, and really wants that like quick fix or the instant gratification kind of thing. So, I mean, there's definitely, you have to be willing to.
And the funny thing was that Williams-Sonoma and their agrarian catalog.
Oh, yeah, they sell they sell inoculated small mushroom logs
for some ridiculous amount of money. So, yeah, but that's just another, whatever product it might be, because not only do you have to produce the product, but you also have to market it, and you have to build up that base of customers and that base of referrals. And like you said earlier, though, too, being creative in how you market it and where you market it. Like, is that something, is the product or the service that you are producing or providing, is that something that you can sell on Etsy?
Right. Or is that viable in your area? Because you're probably not going to be able to open a restaurant that sells duck fat fries if you live in a tiny little community and you don't have any larger urban areas around you or close to you, you know, that kind of thing.
And then the final thing, which I just wanted to mention again, was being frugal. Mm-hmm. And because it's kind of bookending it, being frugal in the beginning so that you don't have to make as much money in order to be successful or in order to survive.
And a lot of the things that play into like cultivating simple, you can cultivate simple in business, you know, and a lot of the same kind of methods and ideas apply across the board. You know, we were pretty simple as far as our businesses are concerned as well. Simplifying definitely always saves you money. And calculating your profit margin is a really great way to kind of monitor that. Because I know, I mean, I'm pretty sure if I asked most of our friends who are in business what their profit margin is, I'm guessing not too many of them could tell me. And I knew exactly what it was because I calculated it every year, and I calculated it for different like portions of our business, because we always had multiple income streams and multiple businesses going at once. So I knew when we started discussing, you know, we need to downsize, we were working too much, we really, you know, just don't have the time. So yeah, let's do videography, let's get rid of that, because my profit margin is only like 50% in this business as opposed to 75% when it comes to, you know, like this other business. So definitely calculating those kinds of things and monitoring that, because otherwise, you know, you can end up spending all your money
on, all your profits on whatever product it is. And there,
and then you have an idea of what you're making. That's the thing. So you know better how to price your product. Because I know people too who, I mean, we know people like this who go out and do, particularly in the wedding industry, you know, photographers start up new ones and they start charging, you know, $500 for weddings. And they're not making any money. And then, you know, you don't want to put yourself in a place where you're alienating all the other people possibly in that industry, depending on what business you're starting, because you don't want to start off that way because you're starting off on the wrong foot then. You know, you kind of want to go in and be a part of that and help bring up the industry as a whole. So
rather than making the industry the lowest common denominator.
Exactly. Yeah. You never want to be the cheapest person product on the block. I don't think. I think that's just...
But in the same way, like you said, they're not making money. If somebody is charging, and it, this could be true for anything. This could be if you're making a piece of jewelry or anything else. If you spend 6 hours making a piece of jewelry and you're selling it for $20, you're making $4 an hour. And that's before you calculate costs. That's before you calculate promotion, your website, shipping, payment fees if you're collecting credit cards. I mean, so you're not, you walk away with a dime. So is your 6 hours worth a dime? Well, it depends on what the point of that, you know, is. Is that to build business? Were you giving that away at a special price because you're hoping that that will return future business? You know, so I mean, there are reasons for doing that. But in the same way, if that's the whole business model is, well, I'm just going to sell cheap jewelry. Well,
a lot of it.
A lot of it.
That means you've got to work a lot.
Well, what we don't make
in... But I think the Dollar General and Walmart already has the corner on that market, so...
What we don't make in profit, we'll make up in volume.
it's like Oriental Trading Company jewelry.
Yeah, exactly.
A gross of necklaces.
A gross of light up plastic rings. So hopefully I think we covered everything that we wanted to.
Yeah.
And we talked in our previous episode when we were talking about business about getting a good accountant, and we're not going to get into the whole financial side of things tonight. Because I think that, as Susie said, anybody can start a small business. There are certain people that probably shouldn't, but anybody can.
Yeah. And I think if you're one of those people that maybe you're not good with money, maybe you need to seek out a partner.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe do a small business kind of in a different, like a joint venture kind of thing. Although that, you know, personally, I wouldn't really do that because I like to be in control of everything. And I mean, not that I'm that kind of a person, but I like to know what I'm getting into. Right. And I know that, I mean, I have such a hard time finding people that can do things to the level I need them or want them done.
Right.
That I just know that in order to produce what I'm going to produce, I have to do it myself, kind of. Yeah. So, I mean, I personally wouldn't do that. But if you have someone you trust, if you're going to go that route, definitely do it legally and get papers,
right?
You know, contracts, work all that stuff out beforehand.
And there are tons of...
And it's probably wise to do that if you're starting a business with your spouse, too. Because, you know, I mean,
yeah,
sometimes things can go south without...
Right.
But, you know,
I mean, that's the reality of the situation.
Yeah, sadly.
But there are a ton of books on business and starting business out there. So that's, but like I said, that's not really what we wanted to get into tonight. We just wanted to kind of share some of what our insights have been over the past 11 years. And the good thing is, even though we're getting out of videography, the whole time we knew it's not something that we wanted to do forever.
No.
And so the whole time we were building up other revenue streams in the background.
And one of the things we definitely did, and we may have talked about this on our previous episode about business, is that we developed multiple income streams so that we were never relying on one specific thing in order, because it is kind of our livelihood. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I make some money on the side through running my parents' charity, but not a lot. I mean, it's a nonprofit agency, so I'm not making a million and never will. And I don't make much salary at all because we choose to put most of the money, you know,
where it belongs,
doing the work that people are sending us money to do. But so we've always been really big on, which is one thing that's a little, we kind of have discussed that's a little nerve wracking because we are putting more of our eggs in one basket now. Mm-hmm. Because we've kind of dried up one, you know, we dammed up one income stream, so to speak, and diverted the water to another area, kind of. So,
but
I'm also building another area of like my personal, like me doing social media work and stuff. Mm-hmm. Whereas I didn't do that before, and I never had time to do that before back when we were doing a lot of weddings. So, and I have a bunch of other businesses I would like to start if I had time. So,
well, and when we get 1,000 people to subscribe to the $5 a month,
that's right,
you know, then, you know, we can actually
do this a little
devote full time to Chio Turan and to Cultivate Simple.
Right.
But until that point,
I'll be making mushroom logs.
we'll be selling mushroom logs at the farmer's market. And that's, you know, our I don't know that we've shared, or maybe we have, but our ultimate goal is to pay off our new place in the next 4 years, and then really to draw back on the amount of, you know, quote unquote, work that we're doing for other people, and really start to build up small businesses, or we like to call them micro businesses, to build up micro businesses around our homestead, or around our small holding. Sorry, I used the H word. Around our small holding, in order to improve it while making money.
Right.
Because then we're getting dual benefit out of it. We're making the money, but also we're improving, you know, our land and enriching it and making it better for us. So
and that, building a community, and right. then maybe these micro businesses we can hand off to other people, you know, and start, because we're definitely entrepreneurs. We never have a lack of businesses that we can start and we can do successfully and we can build. And that's something we do very well. We're very skilled at kind of that, that side of things. We're good at doing, oddly enough, I don't know how, we're very skilled at doing, I mean, we can do websites, we can do photography, we can come up with a lot of that stuff, unique marketing, branding, names, that kind of stuff.
We're also good at analyzing other businesses and finding ways to improve them.
Right. Yeah. And like consulting
businesses
that
we have no interest in whatsoever.
That's something we definitely, I mean, probably because we do it everywhere we go with everything that we see, but we're very good at that. So definitely, I mean, we could develop these businesses, and then it's a great way maybe to help improve your community, because you can perhaps hand this business off to somebody else and let them run it and let them make money doing it. And then you have the time to do something else. And then you're helping build your community by empowering the people around you to have their own businesses, to have a better livelihood. You know, and when you live in a depressed area where some of the industry has gone, and you have people that don't know how to start their own business, don't know how to develop a new trade or skill or market themselves or any of that. I mean, it's definitely, it would be a great way to build your community. So that would be something really great to do in the future. We do that a lot with the nonprofit that I work for, building micro businesses for people, training them, you know, and we always teach them to do it for somebody else, you know, to like pay it forward. Mm-hmm. And that's how they can repay us for helping them out. But I mean, that's definitely an interesting thing to pot. I mean, a whole different way of doing business, building up something in order to.
And I will mention too, you said it there, but one thing we do is that whenever we go into a business, like we go into a restaurant or we go into a coffee shop or we go into a small store, we always walk out of there and say, you know what they should be doing is this, 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 and this, because that would make, you know, that would make their product so much better, or that would make the food so much better if they used a little more spice, or that would make this store so much better if they did this or this, or they should market this thing that they're making because it's really cool, but nobody knows about it.
Yeah.
But that's always applying the things that we talked about tonight, you know, being unique, figuring out how to market your product, making wise decisions, because you walk into some businesses and you've seen that they've done something and you're just like, that was kind of dumb. But it's applying these principles, and it's amazing what you can accomplish just by thinking about those things, not only in business, but also in your personal life. So hopefully you get something out of that tonight. Hopefully that helps you. And if you guys have any questions, or if you have any tips, things that, you know, if you've started a small business or you're running a small business and you have something that you'd like to share, please come over to the comment section, in the show notes at cultivatesimple.com, and you can share that
and what business
get the
would
word
you start?
Out. And what
that's
business
a good
would
question.
You start? Yeah, that's the question for tonight.
What
if you could
you start,
do,
Mr.
if you could
Chios?
Do something and make money off of it and doing it, do
what
it as
it
a
be,
job,
what would it be? Multiple businesses.
Yeah.
I probably have a list of about 10 right now. What would you do if you weren't doing web development?
That's a good question. Because I have a lot of things that I would like to do, but none that I've thought through to their logical conclusion. Yeah.
Would you build tiny trailers? Tiny teardrops?
I would like to build tiny teardrop trailers. I think that would be fun. I think it would be good, but I could definitely see that getting old quickly too.
Maybe if you only build like one or two a year.
Yeah. But then you'd have to charge
exclusivity.
Yeah, but then you'd have to charge a lot of money.
Yeah, but you could make your product different like ours, because we did VOC free.
Yeah,
nobody
but
else does
see,
that.
That's where market research comes in, because there was a guy that was doing teardrop trailers specifically for Mini Coopers, and he was charged, but he could only get about $16,000 per trailer. So I'd have to sell at least 4 or 5 of them a year, which would be. It took me 3 months to produce the first one. Of course, that was the first one.
Right.
Once you get it down, I mean, I could probably do one in a month.
But if you only wanted to do it as one income stream.
That's true.
Maybe two, one, maybe just one.
I don't know. What's something you would do? Let me think about it for a second.
I think I would do foraged pork.
Forest foraged pork.
Yes.
which is even hard to say. We'd have to think of a catchier name.
I would definitely think of a better name. But yeah, like pigs that have been foraged in a large area. So like pigs as close to wild as you can get, kind of. I think I would do that for sure. Totally would do that. And that, I actually have a business right now that I'm in the process of fleshing out the details and trying to develop a plan. And I totally have a plan. I know exactly what I would do. I have, you know, a couple things. I would love to start it next spring if I have enough time, or next winter. I'm not sure if I want to mention it.
No,
I mean, I guess nobody else will start it in the area, but it's something that maybe if I do, it's something that I'll definitely talk about it because it's something that would be valuable for probably a lot of my readers could start something very similar in their area. But I'm in, you know, in the beginning stages of, I've done market research. I actually already have like 6 or 7 customers, I think. But it's just one of those things
I don't want to say, oh, don't mention it because it sound like, but because I actually think that what we could do with that is, you know how you were saying a micro business that you can hand off to somebody. Yeah. I think that we could come up with a marketing plan for that, come up with the business plan for it, you know, as much as we do business plans, and we could spin that off to just make it like an open source business almost where we could put it out there. But I just don't want to talk about it while we're still working through it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
But I mean, it has to do with gardening.
Yeah.
So,
but like, so if we think about the pig, the forest foraged pigs, or pork. So, you know, just in thinking about that and applying this, you would definitely have to make a initial upfront investment because obviously you're going to be breeding. You don't want to buy all these pigs.
And it would be probably Tamworth pigs, I'm guessing. Although I don't know, you could definitely probably do it buying piglets, but it's probably better to do it.
But the forest foraging of it is the unique aspect of it for sure.
Because there are only a few places in the country that are doing it right now. But then you're saving money because you're not having to buy a ton of feed and stuff.
Right.
But you do have to buy electric fencing.
You would have to buy a massive amount of electric fencing.
I mean, it's
fencing.
Like 2 pigs per acre.
Yeah.
Definitely have to buy a lot of fencing.
So then depending on how much you would need to sell in order to make it a viable business, you would need the breeding stock, you would need the fencing.
Right.
You would need the land, which luckily we have. But if you didn't have the land, maybe you could talk to somebody who did and either rent it off them or
barter
some pork with them. Because the pigs are actually going to be enriching their land. Right. It's not like they're going to be hurting it.
But it's a whole different thing. And I mean, a whole different thing than like your general pork, even your pastured pork that you're getting from your local farmer. It's a completely different product.
Right.
And when it's definitely like a niche kind of a product. Mm-hmm. But when you hear that certain kinds of pigs in Europe garner $80-$100 a pound because of what they're being finished on, because of the way that they're being raised. You know, it's definitely, it makes quality and excellence. I mean, it makes a huge difference in the final product. And now's the time to do that kind of stuff because you know, it's the time. There are people, you can find customers easier than you have been able to.
Right. Because it's also something that you could ship.
I mean,
you can ship food quite easily with, you know, dry ice and everything else or whatever, however you would ship pork. But yeah.
But so. It would definitely be a unique product, a different product. Plus, I think it'd be fun.
You know,
what's another product? We have all kinds of things.
If I could do one thing that's just completely out of left field, I think I would do gunsmithing.
Oh, that's a good one.
I think that would be a great skill to have, first of all, and it's something that I think is needed, but something that's actually going away. There's not a lot of people that do that anymore, or do it well, and yet, you know, we might get to a point where old guns are all we have, and so we need to keep them around and keep them running, So yeah, that's something out of left field.
That is out of left field.
That I would
trying to think of all the other businesses I've told Dalen to start, which are all businesses I would start if I had time. But
you talked about a furniture one.
Furniture one.
Because he made some tables back in Ohio with his boss. But
and we've talked about businesses that go along with our property, like doing milling or you know, people can come and mill up some wood and build a table out of it, or, you know, like things like that.
We talked about coming out, having kind of like a father-son business where, you know, dad and son would go out into the woods and cut down a tree, and then they could mill it up, make a table or make some piece of furniture that then you could take back to mom, and it would be this whole experience, you know, of doing all these cool things, manly things, and spending quality time, as well as enhancing our property and value adding the lumber instead of just selling it to a lumber yard.
Right.
So yeah, that was another one that we thought up. Yeah, there's just, we do this all the time. This is fun for us. This is our Saturday night. We don't go out to movies. No. We spend time sitting around going,
you know, businesses.
I was thinking about this the other day. So that's what we do.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the books of the week and get out of here, because now we're just starting to ramble and let people in on too much of
our secrets,
our normal discussion. This is a typical normal discussion with us. So
yeah, it is.
Go ahead. What books do you have? Well, one book I wanted to share before you get into those. There's a really cool book called 4-Hour Work Week, which I'll link up in the show notes. Some of the stuff in there is a little bit out there, a little bit crazy, but it has some really cool ideas that make you think differently about what you're doing as far as your work is concerned. Like I said, there's some stuff in there completely impractical, kind of goofy, but there's also some good thought-provoking things.
I've never read that book. I should.
I actually think I have an audiobook of it, so maybe we can listen to it on the way back to Maine.
Do you remember that book we listened to about where he kept talking about expediency?
Yes.
Do you know the name of that book? Because I was going to try to recommend that, because it's definitely a book about doing about excellence and striving for excellence and not being status quo and being like everybody else, isn't it? I mean, I can't remember.
Yeah, let me you talk but about anyways, your books meanwhile, and I'll try
I am
to
in the
one.
Process of reading this book. Now, I am not super far into it. I'm on page 17. It's called Saved: How I Quit Worrying About Money and Became the Richest Guy in the World. You know, and this isn't a book I even knew about, but the author, Ben Hewitt, and I've actually been on his blog before, ironically. He also wrote the book, The Town That Food Saved, I think. He lives in Vermont. And I'd been on his blog before. He's got sheep, you know, and like all kinds of fun stuff. So, and I don't know, he emailed me out of the blue and ask if I would be interested in reading his new book. And it's kind of interesting so far. And I thought it really kind of went along with this topic of, I mean, it goes along with the topic of the blog and the website of simplification. And, you know, he's self-employed. He's a writer. So it definitely goes along with that. And it's kind of interesting so far. I definitely recommend getting it from the library and giving it a read, particularly if you're into simple living and that kind of thing. The guy he's talking about in the book, I don't want to give away too much of it, but it's kind of interesting. The guy that he's talking about inspired him, that lives on like $5,000 a year or something like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's kind of interesting.
The book is called Something for Nothing.
Yes. Yeah. So is that, I can't remember that book.
Well, it's kind of about how America's going the way of everybody wanting
Everything without doing anything,
which kind of goes back to our point of being willing to work and not get much out of it.
It makes it easier to set yourself apart, I think, if you're willing to actually just put in a good day's work. And, you know, you talked about that. You went up to a local businessman who has a business and all he does is mill cedar. Talk about setting yourself apart and having a unique product. He mills cedar, white cedar.
Yeah.
And, he has trouble finding people that are willing to put in a good day's work to come help him.
Yep.
You know, I mean, he just cannot.
In fact,
he
wanted to steal Dalen from us.
Yeah, he just cannot get an employee that's willing to work. Everybody wants to work. I mean, they don't want to work. They want to get paid, but nobody wants to work.
Yeah.
You know, they forget that he said, it's called work.
He said he had to tell one of the employees that he hired that he could get a lot more done if he'd put his cell phone down, because then he could carry two boards at once. So there you go. So we'll link those books up in the show notes, and you can talk about your other ones next week.
Mm-hmm.
Because those three kind of go along with the topic tonight. So
right.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. We hope that, like we said, we hope you get something out of it. And if you do have any suggestions or recommendations as far as starting a small business, or what small business would you start? That's kind of the question for this week.
That's fascinating to me.
If you could start any small business.
I'm trying to think of whatever other ones I would start.
If you could do something. Well, you can
put them. I would do mushroom logs.
You can put them in the show notes.
Yeah, I should.
There you go. We'll be making comments over there too. So again, we hope you enjoyed this, and we'll be back next week talking about cast iron. But until then, we just hope you continue to cultivate simple.
I'd rather be a farmer. I'd rather work the land. I'd rather see the mountainsides. I'd rather see your hand. I'd rather swim the ocean. I'd rather not pretend. I'd rather do some thinking now. Somehow it all depends. If I could fly away from me, I'd rather see my hometown. I'd rather hold my wife. I'd rather never question things. That's the story of my life. I'd rather not be crying. I'd rather just be whole. I'd rather brave the cleansing fire. I'd rather feed my soul. If I could fly away from me to ride this wind above the tree. Open to suggestions, I'm crying out to you. I'm ready to be finished here. I'm ready for this season. If I could fly away from me to ride this wind above the trees, and oh, to fly away from me. Come and face the longing, whoa, on my knee. Yeah, yeah. Come and face the longing, whoa, on my knee. my